The following session was recorded in Seal, Alabama, October 2011, and is presented by Cynthia Nicholson. Compassion fatigue.
Okay. Any questions up to this point on what we have talked about? Protecting our heart from compassion fatigue. Do you get the concept of how you can catch, how you can identify with, how it can be incorporated into you? When I was studying PTSD and we had missionaries on the field who were dealing with the earthquakes, I interviewed one of the guys who knew about the missionary kids, the children, and he said the children play games that will help them process their reality. For example, the little girls in their house that have dollhouses and they'd place all the little people and the furniture and everything in the house, all perfect, perfect, perfect. Then they'd take their hands and they'd shake, 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 shake. And it was earthquake. And then they see who died and then they remove them and they put the stuff back. Okay, that's one way of dealing with it. Then they had a game that the kids played on the playground. And they'd say, we're going to play earthquake. And everybody would run, 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 just helter skelter, run, run, run. And somebody would yell, earthquake! And they'd all fall down. And the last one to fall down didn't die. You know, games. You go, what's that about? They're processing their reality. The missionaries would tell me, they'd say, oh, last night's earthquake was the rolling kind. But this morning there was one that was the jagged kind where it goes. And, you know, they could classify the earthquakes. They could classify the tremors. So children don't have the same coping skills that adults have. They're not going to be able to categorize, but they're going to put it into the framework of what they can understand. If you are dealing with people that are going through their trauma, but you are also experiencing, say you're living in a high danger area, you're hearing gunshots out the window at night. Any of you in that situation where you hear guns go off? Okay. So if you are in an environment where what they're talking about, you are also experiencing, you have to ramp up your self-care even more, because not only are you vulnerable by catching their emotional stuff, but you also have your own diminished resilience because of what you are dealing with on a regular basis. So, at this time, here are some of the don'ts. Don't make big decisions. The little guy there, the more I think, the more I don't want to make a decision. This is not the way to say, is it the will of the Lord? Yes, no, maybe. And, of course, decisions, decisions, decisions. The boots, flip-flops. Okay. Number two, don't look for a new job, buy a new car, get a divorce, or have an affair. And you're going, Cynthia, these are Teen Challenge directors. Know your audience. Yes, I do. Don't look for a new job, buy a new car, get a divorce, or have an affair. These are the crazy things that people tend to do when they're already beyond caring for themselves. This is what they think they're going to do to fix things. Takes them to an incredibly bad place. You are in no shape to make the big decisions, to at a time like that try to make a life change. What we tell people on the field when they have a super traumatic event is we say, go to the nearest safe place without leaving the country. We have missionaries down in southern Chile. They are boat captains, he and she. They both ply the waters way down, you know, where the Straits of Magellan, where if you read the story of what it took Magellan to get through down there, I mean, it's fierce storms. It's very violent circumstances. And there are indigenous people all up those waters that have asked for the gospel to come to them. They say, please bring us the gospel. These missionaries go with their boat, and they'll come back out with tears in their eyes saying, the guy says, when the anchor gets caught and my wife goes down in the dinghy to release the anchor, I don't know if I'll ever see her again. And he'll have big old tears in his eyes. And she'll talk about how difficult it is to deal with these very, very harsh living people. You know, harsh life makes people harsh. Did you know that? Interesting. How does that relate to where you are at? Okay. So we say, okay, there's a safe thing that you can do when you come back from every one of these trips. You've got to go somewhere safe, get in an environment, go up to Santiago or one of the other cities where there are other missionaries that you can sit and you can process with, you can talk with, that you can have a time to just do your own debriefing, feeling good and supported by others around you. Because at a time like that, you've had so much emotional stress. If you were to make a decision and say, I think I need to go to the Bahamas, you may never leave the Bahamas. You know, that's not the time to make a major, major transition, because you'll never go back to reality. It's better, it's safer to find a safe place within the context of something that you can return to life stronger, healthier, recuperated. Okay? Don't blame others. Being adversarial will only exhaust you further. Now, you remember the narcissistic guy who was really good at blame. This is another kind of blame. It's just like, I got to find somebody to be the scapegoat. Like in that situation with Hurricane George in the Dominican Republic, when the whole society was mad at the government. The government could be blamed. Could they be blamed for the hurricane? No. But they were looking for something where they could just discharge their anger, and so they blamed them for not telling them so that they could make their lives as safe as possible. The blame game, though, where does it take you? It takes you to a place where you're not going to be satisfied. Because even if you can throw the blame elsewhere, it's not going to change the fact that it happened, that the trauma was real, that the trauma took place, and you're going to end up just being depleted, further exhausted. Number four. Don't spend your energy complaining. Avoid commiserating with discontented colleagues. You know how infectious it is to be with somebody who knows the real deal, and they want to tell you all about it. And this is the story behind the story, and they're going to just feed you a whole negative slant on everything. Those complaining people are the least healthy people for you to have in your life. If they want to fill you with the real story and you go, oh, this is going down that negative track again, just say very nicely, you know, I don't think I'm in a good place to hear this right now. I'd just rather not hear it right now. And if they try again, you can go, yeah, I'm still not in that good place to hear that right now. I'd just rather you not talk like that, because it takes me to a bad place. You don't have to say, and it's taking you to a really stinky place, too. But, you know, you don't have to say that. But the discontented colleagues will find mutual discontent. That's not healthy. don't work harder and longer. If it's true that when you are suffering secondary stress, compassion fatigue, you're not accomplishing as much. You know, you're just kind of derailed from your normal goals and you're not accomplishing. But the solution is not to work longer and harder. That's going to be counterproductive because you're going to find that you're just laying bigger burdens on your own shoulders that you're not capable of handling. Has anybody tried that? Has anybody ever been in a situation where they said, I tried doing it by force and it just went south on me? Yeah. And it. Wait. I'm supposed to do this.
I was in a situation one time where I continued to see the grace of God work through my life, but yet personally I was spiraling down. So the gift kept working, if you will, but yet I was just going deeper and deeper into a hole. So, you know, somehow that grace or that gifting that was there continued to allow me to see some level of success or fruit. Therefore, you know, I stayed in it longer than I should have. Didn't pull myself out.
That's really good because, honestly, a lot of times we can depend on what works to continue working no matter what we're doing. I mean, you look at certain church growth principles. Those are going to work because they do, whether or not the life of the people that are working the ministry is all in order and everything is healthy and good with them. Thank you for bringing that up. That's very good. Working harder and longer is not the solution. The solution is address the issue. Okay. Don't try a quick fix. Compassion fatigue can make you vulnerable to addictive behaviors and substance abuse. Oh my goodness, I did not add this just for a teen challenge slide. This is part of the presentation. Addictive behaviors are the first place people go when they're in emotional distress because they get to zone out. Check out. And so, okay, that is not my husband on the far left. It is real. The guy is addicted to his exercise. I know. It's kind of crazy. Okay, so now we're getting into you are leaders. You are leaders. You are ministry leaders, teen challenge leaders. You're part of a system. Systems involvement. What can the organization do? First of all, realistic work schedules for the people that are under us. Unrealistic expectations with too little support are going to burn people out. And if they're already dealing with people who are going through trauma, forget burnout, it's going to go to compassion fatigue. Inadequate or abusive supervision. What does that mean? Inadequate or abusive supervision. Can anybody? Please do.
It makes the worker feel like they're on a desert island, like they're alone with no help, and don't feel like they have any direction, and so they wander around lost at work, just bumping into things because they just don't know where to go, and so they very quickly go to burnout and making poor decisions. Because they'll make no decisions, which can be worse. You know, something happens, so they make no decision because they've got no direction, which is even worse than making a bad decision sometimes.
Tell us about abusive supervision.
Well, you can be in abusive supervision, you can be afraid to make a decision because of kickback and disciplinary situations.
So, what do you do about it? Okay, we got another comment first? No? Okay. What do you do about it? I am the proponent of talk. Share your heart. If you feel that you are not being understood, that there are unrealistic expectations of you with too little support, just say, I feel like I'm not living up to your expectations of me, and I want to do better, but I'm not sure how. Put it on the table. Say it. If you feel that the person above you is giving insufficient or inadequate supervision, don't say, you're a lousy supervisor, because that will always end up shooting you. But if you say, I feel, keep it always on the I feel. The I feels are, nobody can deny that that's how you feel. And maybe, you know, if your feelings are totally, totally unappreciated and undervalued, you may lose your job over it, but hey, chances are that's not going to happen if you do it right. If you say, I feel like I need more direction, and I would really appreciate having some further checks and balances with me, showing me what I could do better. Asking for it in an I feel way without saying, this person is not doing their job or that person is not doing their job. It just leaves you as just asking for what your need is. And it gives you a much better chance of being heard. I was dealing with one woman in a country who, she's an amazing woman. She was, I can't go into the details because she could be identified, but a very classy person with gifts and abilities and incredibly undervalued because she wasn't a minister. And so, you know, she came and she said, I don't know. I love this ministry, but I just don't feel like I'm appreciated for what I am and what I can do. And I feel like everything I do is wrong, that everything I do is criticized. And so I said, well, how about, and I talked about the principle of just putting it out there in I language. This is what it feels like to me when I do this, and this is the response. It makes me feel like a disconnect between my feeling of competence and my feeling of not being able to please. Can you help me with this? This is 2 years later. The woman is still in the ministry's position, and she is valued for who she is because they worked it out. She was ready to bolt. She didn't know how to handle it, and she was ready to leave something that she didn't have to leave. She just needed to bring it to the table in a non-threatening way. Okay? Systems involvement. A real serious issue is responsibility without authority. How many times have you gotten into a level of kind of mid-management, and you were responsible for seeing to it that certain things got done, but you weren't given the authority to make them happen? And you go, oh, that is so frustrating, because the buck stops here, but it doesn't really, and, you know, I want to get it done, but I'm not given the purse strings to make it happen, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, these are things that we, in systems that have anything to do with systems, really need to be looking at from time to time and saying, how are we doing with this? And get feedback from the people in the various departments. Lack of positive feedback. This is fascinating. I was at the AACC conference. I couldn't go to all the sessions because they had like 20 going on at any given time. So I bought the tapes of the ones that I missed, and I'm listening to them. And the guy who wrote The Five Love Languages, Gary Chapman, he now has a book out on the five, he can't call them love languages because he's dealing with executives, but he says the five languages of business. Same five things. Words of affirmation, you know, get, blah, blah, blah. But now he puts it in the context of business people. And he says, I don't use church language intentionally. I know that all this applies to pastors and churches and ministries, but I put it in the business context because that's how the larger representative people will understand what I'm talking about. And he said, the problem is people think that words of affirmation, people who use words of affirmation, think that that's communicating words of affirmation to their people. And he said, I've had so many pastors who come to me wanting me to do things with their staff, and the staff say, oh, our pastor does not appreciate us. And if I communicate that to the pastor, he'll say, I tell them all the time. I think they're great. They're doing a wonderful job. Where's the disconnect? What are they missing? So he gives them this little test of what their love languages are, and he says to the pastor, did you know that this guy's love language is quality time? All you have to do is ask him to ride in your car with you to the lunch. He doesn't need to hear that you think he's great. He wants to have time with you. Riding in the car is amazingly meaningful for this guy that has that love language. So it would be really beneficial from the system's involvement to say, What kind of positive feedback can I give, not according to my style and how I like it, how I like to hear about it, but what's meaningful for that person? Limited incentives for rewards. I don't know how it is in Teen Challenge, but I know in World Missions, there aren't a whole lot of ways to up your salary. I mean, yeah, that ups your budget. It doesn't up your salary. The salary is what the salary is. No matter how big the budget is, we all have the same salary. You know, some people just have more to spend on their ministries. But incentives for rewards, you have to look for other ways to do it when you're a faith-based organization or a ministry organization where we go into it saying, Lord, I'll give you everything. I'll give you my life. And, you know, money doesn't mean anything to me. That's what we say the first month. And then as time goes by, we go, Lord, when is it going to be my turn to get? And just know that he keeps the books. He'll take care of the things. But along the way, how can we, as a systems involvement, look for ways to show meaningful appreciation that's beyond the budget? Hey, guys, there are ways. There are ways. Functions of support systems. Active listening, it's one of the ways. If you want somebody to feel that they are valued, you do not have to raise their salary. You can raise your attention to them. And the feeling of appreciation that comes out of that is verifiably valid. Acknowledgement of good work. Training, conferences, workshop. I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, well, here we are. This is great. You're learning what you're doing. Emotional support, accountability partners, prayer, retreats, counselors. Reality testing, objectives, expectations, feedback. Let's go on. Organizational factors that help members cope with stress. The staff-client ratio, what's your ratio of how many people to the people that come into the centers? So what would be the high end and low end? Whoa, that's really high. Okay, if it's possible to keep that staff ratio as low as you realistically can, I'm sure that's a goal, but keep it in mind that it helps the members in this self-care. Limit the hours of stressful work. Balance the stressful work with the fun stuff. It's good that this midnight in 4 days, 5 days, we're going to go out and have some fun tonight, right? Yes. Well planned. Perfect timing. Gives you impetus to go back and sit 8 more hours tomorrow. Provide positive and constructive feedback. The extrinsic rewards, the benefits and the perks, but the intrinsic rewards are appreciation and recognition. Post-traumatic growth. This is the good news. Recovered survivors of trauma can find themselves stronger than before. This little train that could started out, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. Well, you know, it's not just positive, I'm going to make it because I think positively. No, this is built on everything that we've been talking about. The incremental steps of, I think I can because the Lord has walked this path with me before. I've already experienced some successes. I've already heard the whisper in my ear. I've already taken the Master's hand and had him walk me up to the next level. I've already lifted that weight and felt him put another 5 pounds on it and realized I could do that too. I not only think I can. And to be able to live with the paradox, to know that there's pain and joy at the same time. Jesus suffered the cross for the joy set before him. How in the world can you talk both of those concepts in one Bible verse? But it's there. He knew how to affect. Well, he didn't pray this prayer. This is not a Jesus prayer. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that following on him. But it's still a good prayer for us to pray. Lord, help us affect the changes that we can. Know the difference of when we're supposed to just let it go. And this is where we conclude. Compassion is not ours. It emanates from God through us. It's renewable. God's compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is his faithfulness. God bless you.